I don't want to do it. So death seemed better. How quickly he had forgotten the victories that God had given him. How quickly he had forgotten the food that had been delivered by the ravens, the faithfulness of the widow woman, the fact that God had allowed him to raise her son from the dead. How quickly Elijah had forgotten the victory on Carmel. How quickly he had allowed those things to escape his mind. He saw himself as a failure. Notice this at the end of verse 4. He says, "For I am not better than my fathers." He believed that everything he had done up to this point in his life and his service to the Lord and everything else, that he was an utter failure. That nothing he had done had been right. That he wasn't, and this isn't a statement of humility saying, you know, that I'm not better than my, that's not what he's saying here. He's saying that he's a failure. He says, "It's enough, Lord. I'm giving up. I have just failed at everything that I have done." Does that sound familiar? The devil wants you to believe that more than he wants you to believe anything else. He wants you to get on this downward spiral. He wants you to say, "It's enough. I quit. I'm not fighting the good fight of faith anymore. I'm not going to be the faithful mom, the faithful husband, the faithful wife. I'm not going to do those things anymore because I have had enough. Because I have failed in every way. I don't even want to live." Notice that this spiral led him to focus completely upon himself. Everything was about Elijah. Everything was about him and what he either thought he was or wasn't, or what he thought his life could have been or was not turning out to be. Causes you to only think about how things will affect you and your life. Depression and despondency is a selfish existence, as is evidenced here. It's a selfish existence. To understand that downward spiral is trapping him. That downward spiral has its grip upon him. And we don't see any evidence of it letting up yet. None. It had been days, and Elijah was to the place where he was running for his life and at the same time saying, "Lord, kill me as I hide from this woman that wants my life. Lord, it's enough. I've given up. I don't want to serve you anymore. I don't want any of these things in my life. I want to quit. I have been a failure, an utter failure in my life." Of course, that was completely untrue because he had forgotten all the things that God had used him to accomplish already. He had forgotten all of that, but yet he continued downward and downward as he sat under this juniper tree. Notice here, beginning in verse 5 and 6, we see grace in the midst of despair and despondency. I dare say that if Elijah hadn't been the recipient of the grace of God and God coming to Elijah, Elijah would have continued downward for an indefinite period of time. Now, two things to notice. First of all, it's gracious that God came to him. But second of all, things were not made instantly better when God did. God has a way of working here in Elijah's life. We see verse 5, "And as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, Arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking on the coals and a cruse of water at his head. And he did eat and drink and laid him down again." And notice in verse 7, "And the angel of the Lord came again." It's important to note here, it says angel the first time, but then in verse 7 it says angel of the Lord. That's a special reference, I believe, to a pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. He comes here as the angel of Jehovah. As Elijah is there under the juniper tree giving up, as he is in such an utter place of despair and despondency that he's not even making sense of anything in his life, he comes to him. He comes to him. We notice that he finds Elijah asleep. We see that in verse 5. We see that again in verse 7. Elijah is asleep. This is another result of depression, another result of being despondent. Satan robs you of your ambition, of your desires, zaps you of your energy, makes you not wanting or willing to do anything. And so Elijah sleeps here under the juniper tree. Notice in verse number 5, he shakes him, he wakes him, he says, "Here's some food, here's some water." Notice there, especially in verse number 6, that it's a cake and it's a cruise. You know, when he was at the widow woman's house, that's exactly what he ate. When he went to her the first time, he said, "Bake me a little cake first." And there was a cruise of oil, here it's water, but still it was a cruise. Elijah should have been reminded. There were things here that should have jogged his memory, that should have caused him to begin to consider spiritual things, but it didn't happen. Notice what he does. This too is indicative of depression. He ate the cake. He drank the water. Last sentence of verse number 6. "And he did eat and drink and laid him down again." Here this man is in the pits of despair, despondency, not making any sense. Jesus Christ comes to him, touches him, wakes him up, feeds him. And what is Elijah's response? As I'm going back to bed. Now, if that's not a man that is stuck in that downward spiral, I don't know what is. He had been given food and water. He had been approached by Christ, by the angel of the Lord. And yet his response is to go back to sleep. His response is to continue in the downward spiral. We notice, again, this is indicative of the depression that he felt. He was impervious to the Lord's work upon him at this time. It takes a lot for us to come back up out of this downward spiral once it gets us far. And you've all been there. You just want to sleep. God speaks to you when you do come to church. And what do you want to do? You just want to go back home and go to bed. Or someone reads to you a verse or tries to cheer you up or whatever. And all you want to do is tell them to be quiet. Let me get back to doing nothing. Let me get back to my own thoughts. Let me get back to believing the lies of Satan. Once it takes us this far, it's hard to get back out of. Oh, it so much is. We see God's people held by it all the time. But thankfully, even though we might exclaim like Elijah, "It is enough," God never exclaims toward us, "It is enough." Does He? He never says, even when we are in the pit of despair, as low as Elijah, "They have done enough. I don't want them anymore. They have gone too far. They have given up and I'm giving up on them." God has never done that. And He doesn't give up on Elijah either. So Elijah goes back to sleep in verse number 6. We see in verse number 7 that the angel of the Lord comes and wakes him again. Are we glad that God comes back for us? Even when we don't get it on the first time or on the fifth time, God comes back for us. Because as we should begin to see now, God is not willing to indefinitely allow His children to remain in a state of despondency or despair. It's real. Those things hurt. It's hard to get back out of. But God does not give up. We see here in verse 7, "And the angel of the Lord came again the second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee.' And he arose and did eat and drink, and went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights. We see God provided here for his physical needs. Don't read more into this than what is here. Again, God, through a pre-incarnate Jesus Christ, the angel of the Lord, He comes to him again. He wakes him up. And instead of just having meat and drink or just having, you know, a light meal, He sets before him a feast. A feast capable of carrying him on a 40 days journey. We see that He provides for his physical needs, but it does not in any way immediately impact his spiritual ones. You can feed people. You can do all sorts of physical things for people when they are in despair and depression and agony, when they are in that place, in that pit. You can do all sorts of things for them, and it communicates love. I'm not saying don't do them. But I'm saying don't be surprised when you don't see an immediate response spiritually. You don't see an immediate coming back up out of that place of despair and depression and difficulty. God provided the food because it was needed. Because God already knew what Elijah was getting ready to do. Now notice here in verse number 7, he says, because the journey is too great for thee. And then again in verse 8, and he arose and did eat and drink. Went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the Mount of God. Now, what we don't have here is God telling him to go. Again, we see Elijah picking up and going. Now, some will say, God provided the meat. God sent him unto Horeb. I don't see that. God provided the meat because Elijah needed it. Doesn't mean that God directed him to. Doesn't mean that God sent him to this place. But he provided for that journey anyway. But again, there is no spiritual improvement with this provision. He spends 40 days and 40 nights coming from the wilderness outside of Beersheba unto Mount Sinai. 40 days and 40 nights. That number is always a symbol of judgment, a symbol of testing. He spends that time all alone walking. Walking through the wilderness, walking towards the Mount of God. I don't even know if when Elijah left, he knew where he was going to end up. But he left, seeking something else. In the end, God allowed him and God brought him to Mount Sinai. But we notice in verse number 9 that he resorts to a cave. And he came thither unto a cave and lodged there. You can even see in his choice of dwellings here that his spiritual state had not yet improved. He was still in that throes of depression. He was still in a difficult place. He resorted to the darkness, the dampness of a cave. Now what do you think he thought about during those 40 days and 40 nights? As he walked through the wilderness, as he came towards Mount Sinai, what do you think he thought about? Doesn't tell us, doesn't show us, but it's not a stretch to understand or to think that Elijah kept thinking about himself. And about how what he was going through and what he was experiencing wasn't fair. About how he wished his life would just end. About how that he was the only one left and he had failed God and all of those kinds of things. Once you're in this place of a downward spiral, it's hard to break that kind of thinking. He was alone with his thoughts as he came to this dark, damp cave to continue his existence of despair and despondency and loneliness. It is here where the Lord speaks to Elijah the third time. Actually, it comes to Elijah the third time. The first two times we don't find anything that the Lord said to Elijah. But he comes to Elijah the third time as he is in this cave. And he asks him a question. This question really begins the halting of the downward spiral and causes us to see again that God will not ever let His people operate indefinitely in that condition, though sometimes it feels that way. He says in verse number 9, He came thither unto a cave and lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him. He said unto him, what doest thou here, Elijah? Why are you here? Why are you here? Now, if God, 40 days before this, had said, Elijah, go over there, wouldn't make much sense, would it? Why are you here? Because you told me to be here. No. I think God directed through His will and providence to bring Elijah to Sinai. But God didn't command him to leave the juniper tree and the place in the wilderness. He asks a soul-searching question of Elijah. Why are you here? This place. If anybody tonight is in the pit of despair and despondency, if you are in the cave that leads to this, if you are alone and you are in despair, I ask you, as God had asked Elijah, what doest thou here in this place? You don't have to be there. Elijah didn't have to be in this state. He didn't have to be in this cave. He shouldn't have been anyway. He should have been back in the northern climes of the region and speaking on his behalf. He should have been working for God. We see Elijah in verse number 10 gives a response. And I want you to see in this response again that it's now been at least 45 days. At least. Could be a few more. But at least 45 days since he had fled, since he had taken flight from Jezebel, went to Beersheba, left his servant there, went to the wilderness, and now 40 days, of course, to Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai. And here, he answers the Lord. And in his answer, you can see that there hasn't yet been an improvement. But God is bringing that about with asking the question, verse 10. And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts. For the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away. Elijah didn't think it was fair to have this happen to him. He was judging himself in comparison to the nation of Israel. That's what he's doing here. He was comparing himself to the nation of Israel. They had thrown down the altars. They had killed the prophets. They had forsaken God. And yet, he was the one that was in this position. Didn't think that was fair. Depression causes us to do that. We keep score in the downward spiral, and we say, compared to that person, I'm much better. The problem is, when we keep score, we don't do it fairly. We always do it in our favor. And depression makes us focus on self so much that we think whatever's happening to us isn't fair, and someone else is being treated better, someone else has it better, or something along those lines. That's where it led Elijah to be. To think that. To believe things that were not true. Notice here that he says, I, even I only, am left. Elijah felt all alone. He felt all alone. Depression, the downward spiral, will take you to the place where you feel as if you are all alone. When the reality is quite different many times, most times. He felt as if he was all alone, but he really wasn't. God would later tell us and show us that he had 7,000 reserved that hadn't bowed the knee to Baal. Elijah didn't know that per se. But you know what? When Elijah left that place in the northern kingdom, he took someone with him, didn't he? His servant. Yeah, he did. He left his servant at Beersheba. And so Elijah went away from Beersheba alone by choice. Depression will drive you away from people. Despair will drive you away from people. Instead of drawing you to them for help and for strength and for comfort, it will drive you away. It will give you every reason to want to be by yourself with your thoughts. Want to be by yourself, going further and deeper into that pit of despair. He wasn't alone. He had a servant. He had someone that was faithful to him, that served him. We know that he wasn't alone also, and we won't take the time to check this, but when he had talked to Obadiah, as we mentioned this morning, Obadiah is remembered as saving 100 prophets, hiding them 50 and 50 in different caves, when Jezebel at one time had said she was going to kill all the prophets of God. This was before she wanted to kill Elijah. So there were at least 100 of God-trained men somewhere out there in the nation of Israel. He wasn't alone. On Mount Carmel, in the great victory that he had won, there were some. not all, but some that at least said that they believed that God was God, and they killed all those prophets, gathered them up, supported Elijah. He wasn't alone. And even if all of those things were not true, he still had God. But when you're in this place, you don't even feel as if that is so. You don't even feel as if that is real. How untrue all of this was. But Satan gets us to believe such lies to incapacitate us. To keep us from going forward in the fight and walking by faith. Because when you are in the pits of despair, it is impossible. Really impossible to walk by faith. Someone prove me wrong and I'd be glad to see it. I mean, it's nearly impossible, if not impossible, to walk by faith when you're in this place. Because sight is so much a part, and it's not even real what you're seeing, but that's what you think, that's what you believe. So Elijah's response here to the question, what are you doing here, Elijah? Why are you here? Shows us that his spiritual condition hasn't improved. He's had 45 days on the run. 41 of those days have been all by himself. And he's just sunk further and deeper into this spiral and away from God. And so we see that God intervenes here in verse 11. At the end of verse 10, you can again see his irrational thinking because he is complaining to God, they're trying to kill me. At the same time, he was asking God to take his life. So you see that again. But in verse 11, he says, and he said, go forth and stand upon the mountain before the Lord. Behold, the Lord passed by, and the great and strong wind rent the mountains and brake it in pieces, the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. God displays His power here to Elijah. He does so in some grand and miraculous ways. These would be big events. Things that God uses from time to time, of course, to accomplish His own purpose, to show His power in a grand way. He does that here to Elijah. But you notice, each time the wind, the fire, the earthquake comes, it tells us here that God was not in those things. Does that mean He didn't do them? No. What it means is that God was not speaking to Elijah through those events. He was not speaking to us through those events. We often want the big events to happen. Something over the top to bring us out of our downward spiral. To break the hold of depression or despondency upon us. We want something a lot. Sometimes we'll even pray, God, get a hold of their life. Shake them. Make them, realize by some event. Sometimes we'll pray that way when people die. God, through this big event, use it to your glory. Cause them to realize that they're away from you or whatever the case is. And there are some times that God works that way. There are some times that those things do happen. But so very often it is not those things. So very often it is not those big events. And in fact, when you see people have those events happen in their life that have been away from God, that have had times of depression and despondency, they may respond to the event for a moment. But really, they're just hitting the pause button on the spiral, only to continue after the memory of that event is gone. And so, we think about those big events, and we like them to happen, but so very often, it is not those things that speak to us. At the end of verse number 12, it says, and after the fire, a still, small voice. And it was so, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle, and he went out and stood in the entering in of the cave. He stood in the entering in of the cave. And what is interesting about that movement by Elijah is that God had already told him to come out on the mountain. It appears from that statement that Elijah hadn't done it. God sent the fire. God sent the earthquake. God sent the wind. And none of those things moved Elijah. He stayed in the safety of his cave. See, those big events don't always bring about the result that we think they will or should. But then Elijah heard a still small voice speaking to him. And we see a change in his posture and behavior. He wraps himself in his mantle. And he comes and he stands before the Lord at the entering in of the cave where he was called to be in the first place. And he reaches the bottom of his downward spiral because of the working of the Lord. And often it is the still small voice of the Lord speaking to us that makes a huge difference and impact upon our lives. Hearing the voice of God speak directly to us makes a big difference. That's not something we can manufacture. It's not something that we can just make happen. But it is what God does for His people. And many times that is what saves us from the despair and from the despondency. Notice in verse number 13 that as he hears the still small voice, his reaction being one of humility, he wraps himself in the mantle. And then notice here after he goes to the entering of the cave, and behold, there came a voice unto him and said, this again, it's not the still small voice that has already spoken. Whatever that still small voice said, we don't have. Could have just been Elijah, whatever. But again, he says, what doest thou here, Elijah? Something has happened now, and so God asks him the same question again. Asks him the same question. He says, what are you doing here? Why are you in this place? We've already noticed that his posture has changed. He, for the first time since running from Jezebel, has obeyed God in the coming to the edge of the cave and presenting himself before God in humility, wrapping himself in the mantle. We see a change of behavior. We see a change in his approach and his humility. And notice that in response to this question, really he offers the same words. Notice here in verse number 14, and he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Same words. But I believe that Elijah offered them under much different circumstances. That Elijah here, instead of trying to justify his behavior as he did in verse 10, Elijah here is instead saying, this is what I have done. He's confessing his sin before God. I believe his tone and his voice would have been far different. This admission of guilt, of sin, his confession before the Lord brings him to the end of his despondency, the end of his downward spiral. You know, there is something to be said, of course, for chemical imbalances and things that happen in our brains. But a lot of the depression and the despair and the despondency that God's people experience has something to do with sin and our spiritual condition. I certainly won't stand here and tell you it's impossible for someone that is right with God to be depressed or in despair, because that would be foolish of me to make such a broad statement. But at the same time, for a great portion of God's people, if we are right with God, we will not be on this downward spiral. And we see that what brings him out, of course, is God working, is God causing him to face, and calling him, of course, unto it. And then notice the reason why we believe the difference in verse 14 is repentance, and his posture is changed, and his downward spiral is over. It's because in verse number 15, and the Lord said unto him, go, return on the way to the wilderness of Damascus. He tells him here, Elijah, get back to what you were doing. He says, go back. You're at the end of this road. Go back to where you're supposed to be serving God. He sends him back by the way of Damascus to anoint Hazael king over Syria and some other different things that he needed to take care of. And so, in a sense, he sends him back through the wilderness, retracing his steps where he had been through. No doubt picking up his servant and then heading back through Damascus and all of these things, tracing his steps back. Very well could be that he spent 40 days walking back, 40 days traveling, as he had spent going unto this place he spent in return. His thoughts, of course, being much different. His position and his walk with God much different. These things seemed to cost Elijah 90 days of his life, give or take. Time he couldn't get back. But at least he got back. At least he was rescued from the downward spiral of despondency and depression. So, in answer to the question, does God care? Yes, He cares. Does God provide an escape from our emotions and those things that would so easily beset us? Yes, He does. He cares. Now, there are consequences always to these things as they happen. There are scars, there are wounds, there are difficulties that remain after this for time to come. It was on this return trip as well that he picked up Elisha. And very soon, Elisha took his mantle, and Elijah was taken home to be with the Lord in glorious fashion. And so, we see that these things do have an effect upon us. But praise God tonight that He doesn't leave His children under their own devices. He doesn't leave us to the trappings of Satan and the despondency that we do so often feel. He comes and He gets us. He rescues us. He takes us away. The greatest thing that we have to fight despondency and depression today is to walk by faith. The walking by faith that we talked about this morning will help us, of course, not to make that first decision. I mean, he could trace all of this back to making the decision to run from Jezebel. And it cost him so much, and it hurt him so badly. Put him to the place where he was irrational, where he thought he was all alone and all of this. I mean, it's so amazing to think one decision could put him on such a course, but it did. And it can for us today, too. One step by sight instead of by faith can have such a difficult ramification on our life. But praise God. And pray for people that you know that struggle with depression, despondency. Pray for those people that experience those things. Help them with everything you can. And just pray that God would speak to them in that still small voice. Bring them back. Because that's what is needed most. Let's stand. We'll be dismissed.